Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Today we're talking about Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, ticker FCAU. And as probably most people are aware, they produce cars and sell them globally. And they have a lot of different car brands. Pretty much all of them, they kind of came together with the Fiat Chrysler merger, except Ferrari, which was spun off. The big brands for them profit-wise, the important ones are Jeep, Ram, Dodge, Maserati, and I think commercial vehicles they also make reasonable profits with. And then they have a bunch of other ones that are not that important. And as well, they have some side businesses like Magneti Marelli, which produces car components, and Mopar, which is like parts and services in the US. The company currently trades at about 23 billion euro, 26.5 billion US dollars, so almost 17 US dollars a share. Yeah. And I don't know, a few months ago it was all the way up to $24 US a share, but kind of dropped significantly in recent months. And do you own any of the stock, Alex?
No, I do not.
And I just kind of built a 4% position over the last like 2-3 weeks researching the stock.
Okay.
And maybe I'll increase it a little bit more, see what happens with the stock price. And I guess we can discuss what our fair price is.
For sure, yeah.
I came across this company probably 4 or 5 years ago. I don't remember exactly. I saw it in Monish's Paprai portfolio. And I was thinking, well, interesting. I'll take a look at it. And it's trading at like 5 billion euros or so. And I was like, yeah, it looks kind of cheap for all the brands and all the manufacturing facilities they have. But they're producing no profits whatsoever, and Fiat has never produced any profits, and Chrysler was always a suspect company, so I'm not interested. And I guess that was a mistake in hindsight to discard it that quickly. And yeah. I guess now that the price dropped again, and I've kind of heard a few more times Monish Paprai speak about the stock, I thought, hey, let's look at that stock.
Is it still in this portfolio, or?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah.
And I think he said like he wouldn't sell it before it's like $28 per share or so.
He said that in one of those YouTube videos?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think he said that even then he thinks he would likely leave a lot on the table.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. When you did your research, was there anything that you particularly liked about the company?
Well, you can see that, you know, how far they've come in the past 10 years, and Sergio did a really good job at saving Chrysler, for one. And they're doing really well. You know, it's still really up and down business, you know, in terms of some years they produce, you know, a lot of profits, and some other years they don't. But
just the cyclicality of the car industry. So, just you're saying basically their performance, the way the company executed, probably over the last since the recession, since they maybe merged with Chrysler.
Well, they're definitely the better performing companies since the recession, and they've had some tailwinds that help them with that, with, you know, recovery and low interest rates as well. And they've made some really good capital allocation decisions in terms of spinning off Ferrari and looking at other spinoffs as well. So I think they've done a really good job.
Yeah, and probably not investing too much money, wasting money in research and development. Mm-hmm. Now, some people would argue that's a problem, but I would say, hey, no, I agree with Sergio Marchionne.
Because they've had a lot of criticism, well, I don't know, a lot of criticism in terms of lagging behind on electric vehicle development.
And autonomous.
Autonomous.
But now they just sold like 80,000 vehicles to Waymo or something like that.
Okay.
So they're going in partnership with Google, which has done like billions of investments mm-hmm. in autonomous vehicles. So right. I think that's the better way to go, to kind of go through partnerships,
yep.
to have suppliers spend money on developing right. battery technologies. In my opinion, those are not real issues. That's right. not what I'm concerned about, yeah. but you know, some people might see that as a concern.
What's a legitimate strategy? Yeah. We see them working in oil sands. Suncor has been leading the charge in terms of autonomous haul trucks, and yeah. certain other companies, competitors that are, you know, decided they're going to be followers in that and implementing that technology, right?
Yeah.
So
doesn't mean that
it's a legitimate strategy too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what I liked was price and probably not much else, but I, like, just looking at the overall business, what kind of free cash flows it produces, what earnings, all the facilities, production facility it owns over the world, the amount of cars it sells, their total sales revenue. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the price of the company and you compare it maybe on a price to sales ratio to other automakers, and you look at how they've executed over the last few years, and I'm kind of like, yeah, it looks very, very cheap to me. But I guess the 30% recent pullback kind of helped that, so that made it more interesting to me. And that's about it. And then there's a huge list of things I don't like about this company.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe you want to start or...
What? Well, I like the company. It's, I think a lot of people are attracted into their management has built up a lot of credibility over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And they've just rolled out their 2018 and 2022 business plan. So, and because they've developed a lot of credibility in the past 10 years, I think a lot of people are... you know, taking that for full value and, you know, prorating those numbers forward.
And saying...
gets it to a really big market cap from where it is today. But again, it's things change and they're a cyclical industry. And yeah, the industry, the way the industry is going is going to impact the value of the stock more than how good management is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's still a downside risk to the stock. Such as, you know, they rely heavily on the American consumer, and that's their biggest market.
Mm.
And what provides the largest profit for them is SUV vehicles,
yeah.
you know, bigger vehicles. And that's not that different than from 2000 to 2010. A lot of big car companies, that's where they're getting the profit margins from. And that can disappear pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So that's one of the biggest risks I see with the stock.
Yeah. It's definitely not like a smooth kind of company that will like make 10% earnings every year after year.
Yeah, you can't.
It's not going to happen.
Past 4 years of financials and
yeah.
keep on
extrapolating
the multiple you're willing to pay for the stock.
Yeah.
And just compound that forever, because it's just not that type of company or industry.
Yeah. I would agree with that. So to me, it's like I pretty much hate almost everything about the car business. I'm sure there's some niche players, some parts, you know, like Napa Auto Parts or these kind of businesses mm-hmm. have pretty high margins. But just the OEM, like actually mm-hmm. building the cars and selling them, it's low margins. It's competitive. So many players in the industry. They all spend billions of dollars researching new things, new technologies, and basically at the end they all come to the same point and selling the same product. So to me, there isn't that much differentiation between the products. So a lot of pricing pressure, and it's just not that of not that good of a business. So margins are typically low. The cost, the money that they have to reinvest, the capital is high.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have problems with unions and a lot of times pension liabilities that are pretty high.
And governments are very involved with
regulation
and in terms of jobs, you know.
Yeah.
You look at the history, there's always a government willing to bail out an automobile company because
yeah.
of the political implications and how it
yeah.
appears in the media. So
at the same time, they don't let you close down a plant or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
yeah,
there's so many issues with the industry. So the only way it really makes sense to invest in that is that you do it at a very cheap price.
Right, yeah.
So those are kind of like my general thoughts about why I don't really want to be too much involved in that industry. A few other things that are issues to me is the CEO just died. We mentioned that. And I mean, he was a phenomenal CEO. I think a lot of people who really follow what he did and follow the industry, they're very impressed by his track record.
Yeah, sounds like he had a lot of respect within industry and outside of industry for what he did, not only for the Fiat Chrysler combination, but also Fiat.
So the question is kind of, will the new management be able to kind of continue his kind of performance, or at least like have similar good decision making as he had shown in the last like 15 years or so that he was CEO?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the way it plays out. And even if they stick to 100% Sergio's plan for the next 4 years, it could still work out very differently because...
Yeah, I agree.
You know, he did really well, but he also had some tailwinds during those years too. But Fiat was in a good position going into the financial crisis as well, which helped him do a lot of the things. So that's a lot of credibility to give to the former management as well. But, you know, going forward, it's really dependent. And I think they say this in you know, their business plan and in their conference calls. That those targets rely heavily on maximizing their Jeep brand to benefit even more than it has over the past few years. So that's another risk that you have to talk about too, is will Jeeps, you know, the Wrangler and the Cherokee, are they going to remain popular in the next 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
And taste can change.
Yeah,
especially the Wrangler. Like for a while, everyone hated it because, well, you have to have a certain. I've driven a Wrangler. I'm not a big car guy, but you drive it, you can feel every single bump in the road. So you need to have a specific reason why you're buying it, for style or something else.
Yeah,
and things. And you ask anyone who owned a Jeep during the '90s, they absolutely hated it. The quality was horrible.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it won't happen, but I'm saying that there is risks where brands deteriorate over time as well.
Absolutely agree. That was one of the points I thought about. So the two biggest risks that I saw was the diesel liabilities. I think there's like a lot of car makers that were involved in kind of making the emissions look nicer than they truly are. And the second one was, to me, cyclical, which you spoke tons about. So just the industry overall. But then also there's the customer preference change. So I think Dodge Ram, for example, they went from a 20% market share to a 30% market share. But I think there's just as good a chance that they go back down to a 20% market share, where there's people saying, you know what, I actually don't like these pickup trucks as much anymore. I think a Ford is better or a GM is better. Mm-hmm. So
it goes up and down a lot.
So you have the cyclicality of the industry overall, but then you also have consumer preferences on certain brands that kind of change, which that's where I think Fiat Chrysler has done a phenomenal job on really making Jeep more popular. Mm-hmm. Like two of my friends bought Jeep Grand Cherokees in the last like 2-3 years or so. And it's like before that, I knew no one who owned a Jeep.
Is your opinion, is it more style that's in, or has the quality of the vehicle improved significantly as well?
I think they probably caught up on quality. That's my feel kind of about it. I think styling, it's become more popular, and I think they kind of tend to sell just a little bit cheaper than Ford and GM.
So if you're in the market for, I don't know what you call it, a mid-size SUV.
Correct.
You're going to look at Jeep Pathfinder.
No. Pathfinder is Nissan, but...
I'm saying like the same. If you were like...
Okay.
Cars,
yeah.
Would you be looking at, what's the equivalent of a Nissan and a Ford Explorer maybe?
Yeah, Ford Explorer would probably be in the Grand Cherokee range.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, that can always change. That's a risk, I would say. So a few other issues that I think are pushing the stock price down is they're saying if Fiat Chrysler is not investing in autonomous vehicles and it's not investing in electrification. And like I think we discussed these two, like my opinions on that, I'm not really concerned about it.
No, I think, you let the Teslas and the competitors of the world, really do that R&D. And Tesla's not making money right now.
Yeah.
I haven't done a deep dive into the stock, but you see all the headlines all the time.
Yeah.
So if they went bankrupt, I'm sure there's going to be assets that, you know, companies could pick up, you know, if not the whole company.
Yeah.
And there's other...
I think there's so much sharing within the industry in terms of there's all these suppliers, like which usually supply all of these systems. So like car manufacturers, they don't really build cars that, like they put them together, but they don't build all the components.
Yeah.
So to me, like there's a lot of duplication on efforts. And at the end of the day, I look at cars and they all kind of have the same technologies.
Hmm.
That is my opinion, but other people might look differently about it. I guess another thing about the autonomous vehicles, it's kind of people say, hey, there will be less vehicles on the road. I would say that I think autonomous vehicles, like really full autonomy, is like longer out than certain companies are promising. And then also, if they are out there, I think there will be a lot more miles driven. Like the cost on miles driven will come way down.
Right.
And people will live further away from their job. Mm-hmm. People will like take more trips in cars instead of public transport. So, and you have a lot of growth in a lot of like countries like China and India in terms of automobiles. So I'm not too worried about the number of cars dropping way down in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Personal opinion. Another one is tariffs. I think that's kind of pushing down the stock price right now. I don't think that's a concern long term, really. I think either way, American businesses are always meant to make money, and politicians will always drive regulation that will, or policies that will kind of help them to make profits. I don't know. Do you have any other kind of issues on it, or does that kind of summarize all?
No, I mean, I think that's the bears on the stock that summarizes the cases. I think the cyclicality of the business is one major one. Tariffs you touched on, and it's smart to probably make a bet that issue is not going to last forever, because there's been times in the American history they've had huge tariffs, in the 70s. And it's worked out over time, so it's not a long-term, shouldn't be a long-term bear case for this stock. And autonomous, in a lot of technologies, there's a lot of people who are bulls on autonomous and technology right now, and it takes a long time to implement that. I mean, even if the technology is there for autonomous, it takes a long time for regulation and for people to adopt that technology too. It's not going to be easy, because you have there's no autonomous cars on the road right now.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to convince people to get rid of their cars and their willingness to drive themselves. A lot of people enjoy driving.
And owning their own vehicle too.
And that's part of their pride, especially. Well, if you grew up in a capitalist society, you cherish your own assets.
I think we agree on the biggest problem is cyclicality, probably, of the industry, and it's kind of and maybe consumer preference.
Mm-hmm.
Is that gonna go back down in a trough kind of thing, and the whole picture on Fiat Chrysler might look completely different from what it looks like right now.
Yeah. And for me, it's like you're trying to say, okay, well, how much more? And everyone talks about this, like, okay, how much? We've had a 10-year bull run on the stock market now. Yeah. Just broke another record, I think, this past week. And people are always saying, well, how much further can it go before we hit another crash? And with the cyclical company, you're always wondering that too, because inevitably, that stock is going to go quite a bit lower from where it is. It seems like a good deal now.
Yeah.
It might go lower, even if the value, intrinsic value hasn't changed at all.
Yeah.
That value, the stock price could go down significantly. You'd be like, oh, I could have gone up for cheaper. Or,
yeah.
And that's, a lot of people think that way.
Yeah. See, that's where I'm a little bit less concerned, where I'm like, okay, if the intrinsic value, you know, through a recession is still higher than what I bought it for, then I'm not concerned about the price temporarily or for a few years dipping lower than what I bought it for.
Nor should you. The only, I guess, impact of a value investor's thinking would be, okay,
maybe
a trade-off of, okay, I have whatever $10 of capital be investing right now, and then if it goes to $5, I only have $5. And even if you wanted to move it to a stock with a bigger differential between the price and the intrinsic value, you have less money to allocate to that.
Mm.
So,
yeah. I guess it's difficult to predict the future, right?
Well, yeah.
I think one other kind of concern that some people mention is China, and Fiat Chrysler hasn't really, really kind of grabbed a good foothold in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, that's not a negative at all. It's like, if you're making all these profits in the US with all the Jeeps and the Rams, and you have all this potential of selling the Jeep brand and bringing on Maserati into China. I think they already sell like 50% or so of Maseratis in China, but maybe sell more units even. And I think that's a possibility with Maserati for sure. I think that's just an upside to me on the stock. I don't see that as a risk at all.
Yeah.
So.
It's just another potential for them to, more potential for them to grow in the future. Yeah. And
a new market, right? Like certain companies don't necessarily have to be in every market. You can do very well just being in the US or just being in Europe or just being in a niche supplier industry or whatever it is. So.
Yeah. It's not, it's tough that just because it's flavor of the day is to expand in China. And if you're not there,
doesn't mean
company.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be more conservative and just play in the areas you know where the margins are there. And there's lots of companies that moved to China and have had to pull back too, because it's not an easy place to do business for some things.
Yeah. With that being said, I think Fiat is like intending to really increase their market share there, but whether they'd be successful or not, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on management?
I think we kind of talked about it a bit before, and not anyone specific except for Sergio, that they've done a really good job going through the 2008 financial crisis and taking advantage of the tailwinds they've had over the past 10 years and doing a really good job with allocating capital, not spending too much money on R&D that's going to be wasted or spin-offs, which was good. I think they've done a really good job, and they've really extrapolated the value out of certain brands that were doing really well.
Yeah.
And they focused on those, and so I give them a lot of respect for what they've done.
I would say definitely a loss with Sergio, and but I kind of like tried to research Michael Manley, the new CEO, a little bit, and it's not too much information about him, but you can say that Sergio hired him in 2009 to like manage Jeep and Ram. So like exactly the brands that did the best and that are like the major contributors to their bottom line right now. And he grew Jeep sales from 2009 from 320,000 to, I think they're guiding right now in 2018 around 1.9 million or so.
Wow.
So that's just, I think, probably 2009 was a very low that he's starting from, but still, like, I think he did a very good job. So, and I think for him working like almost the last 10 years with Sergio, I don't think there's a way that he wouldn't like have a lot of learnings like from Sergio in terms of capital allocation, and I think there's a good reason why he's picked as the successor. So it's difficult to say if he will have the same success as a CEO as he had in managing these car brands. But I'm kind of hopeful that kind of they continue what they did over the last 10 years, what has made them successful.
Mm-hmm. No. Who did he work before? Before he came over to Fiat?
I don't remember that. Okay. He was in a few different companies, and he was at Daimler Chrysler as well for a while, and then Chrysler, some smaller, okay, also in the automotive industry.
Right.
Uh-huh. Modern competitors?
Well, their competitors are the majors out there, and GM, Ford, and Mazda. They all have a vehicle that probably competes with their, one of the Jeep products that they rely on, and then even in their small compact cars, they've got there are a lot of competitors out there, the big names. Moat,
non-existent.
It's tough to it's not much of a moat, really. You have it in terms of your size, and be able to allocate that much capital into and experience. And you're seeing a little bit of the experience in terms of how Tesla's been able to compete and ramp up production on certain vehicles.
How they were struggling with it.
Right? So there is a moat in Tesla, but in terms of translating that to a profit, like sustainable profit, I don't think the industry is there, or Fiat has any more of a moat than GM or Ford or Mazda or Volkswagen.
I would fully agree.
Back and forth, when you go look for a car, you're going to go to the same auto mall and look at all the competitors and look at their different vehicles. And like you mentioned, a lot of them, it's just brand name. It's a lot of the components are all shared between all the other cars. I remember I bought a Mazda 3, and it was, a lot of it was from, it was a Ford undercarriage. And
okay.
You're right. So I don't think they have a moat.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I don't. I think you kind of touched on that really well. It is what it is, kind of. I think if there's a lot more consolidation, if you had like two major players like Airbus and Boeing, you would have a big moat, and you could make very good profits in the automotive industry. And I think over time, there will be consolidation, there will be mergers, there will be bigger players buying smaller players. And I think then probably the industry will become more profitable, higher margins. But
eventually, over time, we'll see. It consolidates enough. You look at rail and airlines. Rail took a century to consolidate enough to really make money. I can't remember. I remember reading a book, and they, I can't remember if it was, but it was significantly more rail lines, per miles of rail lines were in 1925 or 1930 compared to today, and the economy is growing, whatever. Tenfold.
which completely makes sense in that case, I would say. Growth, free cash flow use.
Growth, it's anyone's guess on how long the cycle will keep growing for, but inevitably it will go down. And when they do, when it corrects, they're going to lose 30% of their sales in 1 year. If you look at the average for the cycle, it could grow, but they're it's not going to grow much more than GDP globally. Outside of if they want to go faster, they're going to have to steal market share from someone else, and they've been doing a lot of that with the Jeep brand. So how much further can they go in terms of grabbing market share? A part of their 2022 plan is to also improve margins, production margins, and is that possible? They were talking about using shared components between vehicles, and I feel like, I don't know the details, but that's already a known practice in the industry, and I'm sure they've already been doing it to a certain extent.
So it's
how much more further can they get value out of that? It's because the $10 billion was the value that I think they're going to get from cost savings and from now until 2022 through those types of strategies. And can that be achieved? I don't know. Is it aggressive? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, yeah, the company expects a lot of growth over the next 5 years, both in volume and margin. I think margin, I feel it's is more possible. I think they're still on the lower end of margins for automotive manufacturers. On volume, I think they're not going to experience the same kind of growth that they had in volume over the last 5 years. Like they won't keep grabbing market share indefinitely. There might be some opportunities in China. I think they will do well in China. I don't think they will meet their targets in 2022. But at the same time, if they would, you would get a huge multiple on your stock price.
Right. Yeah.
So to me, even if they get halfway there, or even if they kind of keep what they're doing currently, you're doing well in the stock. Yeah. So that's kind of my thought on that. I think there's likely a dividend coming. That's what I read in the annual reports or one of the investor presentations and a few articles. I'm not a huge fan of that decision. Just at that kind of stock price that it is right now, I think it'd be much wiser to use the free cash flow to buy back shares.
Right.
That would be better for shareholders. But I think they will also buy back shares. Negative growth, like you mentioned, is a possibility. There could always be a 30% drop. They are saying that if there's a 30% drop, they will be like at a break even, which I would say if that's true, that would be a very good outcome. So if, you know, there's a big recession and they go to zero profitability for 2 years or so, and then they get back into profitability. Even I think if they would lose $1 or $2 billion a year, I think their balance sheet, they can handle that easily.
Right, yeah.
So the question is really, what is their average profitability? Like, what do you see as their normalized earnings, like through the cycles? And that is really hard.
It's really hard to determine, especially as we talk about change in popularity of certain brands changes all the time. So if their average profitability is like $1.5 million, I mean, you say, okay, well, maybe I'll just use that as going forward. But that can be dependent on one brand or two brands, and things can change. And
I guess that's leading us right into valuation.
Yeah, so well, you already touched a bit about how you. I'll just go over how I evaluate it. And I think we've already kind of gone over it, is that I took the 2022 business plan and just extrapolated that and came up with the most optimistic valuation if they met all those targets, and that was what they were going to make going forward, you know, and then built in some, you know, small growth, like 3% on top of that going forward. And you come to about like 120 billion euro valuation, I think. And so
I read your article on Seeking Alpha that you just released, and I think you used a multiple of like 12. So
12, yeah.
Yeah. I came up with a valuation just based on PE and their 2022 business plan of like 70, 80 billion euros, but I used like a PE of 8.
Okay.
So,
so very similar how we figured that out.
So if everything goes perfect and the market appreciates that and rates it at like 8 times earning or 12 times earning, you're talking about, I don't know, almost 100 billion euro valuation from today of like a 23. And that is if you take Magneti Marelli out, if you spin it off, right? Yeah. Like it's, then you're under a 20 billion market cap because those numbers that they're projecting for 2022 is a past spinoff of Magneti Marelli or sale. So you're talking about like a 5x potential, which I think we both don't believe it.
But it'd be nice if it happened.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to look at the probabilities of an investment.
Yeah.
Succeeding, because it's never always 100%.
Yeah.
Regardless if you buy all of GM for $1, there's always a tiny, small percentage chance. And, but if your range of upside is 90% chance it's worth more than $22 billion, and it's only a 10% chance that it's worth less, then it could be a good investment.
Right? Yeah. That's how I look at it, it's similar.
It's thoughts. The same thing. It's like limited downside, yeah. Huge upside. And so yeah. I think I think I took half of what they expected to make in 2022 and used that to kind of evaluate what it might be worth.
And what did you come up with then based on that?
How much was it? I think $40 to $60 billion range.
Euros.
Yeah. Intrinsic value if they met the 2022 plan.
Yeah. So you both want to discount like your purchase price off that.
Right.
You don't want to pay $40-60 billion.
No, I do not. No. Yeah. I would say that if they met the 2022 business plan targets, that would be the intrinsic value through the cycles of that business.
Yeah.
Today would be a good price if everything. And with cyclical companies, the value of the stock price of the can go significantly above the intrinsic value too. So you could make a lot more money on that if they hit the 2022 business plan and the economy kept on doing well, because there's a lot of speculation and momentum that's built in stock price sometimes for cyclicals. You just have to be really careful when you're holding onto a stock that gets to that levels, because there's a huge downside to that too. So,
anything else, or I can?
I mean, the downside. There is a downside, and I thought I couldn't really, based on today's financials, you know, where they're at with pretty low debt, and shareholders' equity. I didn't think it could be worth any. Less than $10 billion, you know. Even if the economy would collapse, there would be someone who would be willing to help them out, and there's so that's the downside I saw. And most, you'd be losing about 50% of your value if you invested at today's prices.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a high probability that would happen. But it could happen.
Yeah. I think that's that's good that you're looking at the downside and saying, you know what, I think that business is at least worth $10 billion. Euros and I looked at all sorts of different from all sorts of different angles at the stock and valuation. So one we just discussed was kind of like, what could that business be worth in 2022? And I came up with like, I could really see that business trade for 80 billion euro, which would be 4 times your current purchase price, which I think is like very optimistic estimate. And then I kind of thought about, okay, what do I think the business should be trading for right now? And I thought, okay, what are their earnings for 2018? And they're guiding at the end of second quarter, they were guiding for 5 billion euro earnings. So I thought, okay, like a valuation of 8 or so is reasonable. So you could say, okay, maybe the business should be trading at a 40 billion euro valuation. Then I looked at normalized earnings, what I thought makes sense, what would be a normalized earnings for this business. They have about 120 billion euros in sale right now. And I think it's reasonable to expect about to make at least a 5% margin on it. Like they're aiming for 10% margins. I don't know if that's possible, but I think through the cycles and stuff, I think they should be making 5%, because otherwise, why are we in these businesses at all? Like if we cannot even make 5% profit, and 5% of 120 billion in sales, is roughly, I don't know, like six billion euros in earnings times a P of 8, you're talking 48 billion euro. So maybe the 120 billion on sales is maybe high. Maybe they can only do 100 billion in sales,
right?
Cyclical adjusted. But I think over time, actually, I think sales will kind of increase. Who knows? So then you would say 48 billion in euros, maybe through that evaluation. And I also looked at price to sales.
Yeah.
I looked at some competitors like GM and Volkswagen and Mercedes kind of as a premium brand. And they were trading more like at a price to sales of 0.35. Volkswagen was like the lowest at a 0.3 that I saw. And then there's Fiat Chrysler, which is trading at 0.2 price to sales. And I personally think Volkswagen is probably trading too low compared to their earnings, and it's just with all the diesel problems and stuff. but it's almost like, okay, so you're trading at like a 50% discount or 30% off of Volkswagen. So I feel like they could be trading right now 30 to 50% lower than they should be. And then you're talking about a 30 billion euro valuation from today's 23 billion. Yeah, 30 to 40 billion valuation range. So I'm kind of looking at all of these and I'm always getting to, yeah, I think the stock should be trading like 30, 50% higher
so from now today's price. Talking about the US stock that's trading from the US exchange, it's trading at around $16-$17 on the New York Stock Exchange, and we're probably looking at
fair price up to $24 per share, but which it traded like a few months ago.
Right.
Maybe it will go back to that price quickly. Maybe it will never go back to that price. I don't know. But to me, kind of the potential of the upside, and kind of when you're saying, I could see the stock price half, just like in, if there's a major recession, if there's a big diesel fine coming out, I could see it dropping down, which potentially, in my opinion, would mean that I might add to that stock.
And you're right now, you're at 4% position of your portfolio.
Yeah.
What would you go up to?
10, never higher than 10 on this type of business. I think like generally, like I don't own a single stock other than Berkshire that's above 10. So.
Yeah. Cause it's not, it Fiat Chrysler, regardless of how well it did over the next 4 years, would you consider a stock you'd hold forever?
No.
Not to?
Probably not.
No.
I don't think it's a business that you want to hold for 30 years with like 5% margins and return on equity not being that good typically.
It's not compounding money successfully over time.
It's kind of a question as you buy it at a deep enough discount right now. And that's kind of where I'm like, I think you are. On top of these valuations, there's a few things that I see as additional potential to profits. And it's not like, oh, I came up with this. This is in the annual reports and stuff. So they're planning to spin off Magneti Marelli, which different people valued at between $3 to $6 billion worth alone. And it's like 10%, less than 10% of their EBIT, of the overall company's EBIT. Right. So I don't know. I think $3 billion would actually be on the low side. Like if to value that company, because it has like 550 million per year of EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. So if you put like a multiple of 10 on that, you would get a valuation of like 5 billion euros or so alone for this.
Right.
And now I just read on the news like yesterday that they're apparently in talks with KKR, like a private equity, to buy that business. So I'm really curious what's going to come out of that.
I think the stock went down actually when they announced that, which is surprising. Yeah. So some people are perceiving that to be a negative.
But it's up 3% today, the stock, right?
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
I don't know.
What day is it today? Just so listeners know.
I don't, it's August 24th. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
2018.
They talked about spinning off Maserati as
potentially,
which if it's anything like Ferrari spin off, I think people will be pretty happy.
Yeah. Well, it also contributes about 500 million to EBIT.
Mm-hmm.
So valuation of 10. So alone in these two brands, it's like they might sell for 10 billion euro, maybe less.
Right.
But so that's why I'm like, and then you have everything else. So is the company worth at least 10 billion euros? I would say yes.
Yeah.
We'll see, but
as long as they still, like, whatever they spin off, there's some value left in the company.
Yeah.
It's not just crap. They've got, you know, as long as the Jeep brand keeps on making money for Fiat Chrysler, then there's still value in the original entity.
Yeah. So and you're owning the spin-off, right? I don't know if all listeners would be aware of that, but you're getting shares in the new company and you would own a Maserati and whatever it trades at, that's kind of what that's value.
Into.
Yeah.
And they're starting to try to expand the Maserati brand into North America as well.
Yeah. I've seen like three yesterday. I don't know, maybe because right now I'm like looking specifically for Maseratis.
Before we started talking about this, I've noticed a lot more Maseratis because I lived up north where there was nothing but an F-150 before. But there's a lot more Maseratis than I would come to expect in Calgary than I thought.
I think there's some potential in that brand, and I would be kind of disappointed if they would sell it under 5 billion euros. I'm really curious what's going to happen on these rumors that they're in talks with KKR. So we'll see. So I think that some upside potential spin-offs or selling business units. Then they have another bonus where they're the only big auto OEM that doesn't have like a financing arm in North America, which they're kind of estimating would contribute like between 1 and 2 billion euros in profit after tax.
So would you see that as a positive if they start up their own financing? Or would you say that's a little more? I mean, there is risk with it too, right? So
they're pretty profitable businesses, and they're kind of, they keep profitability through the cycles because people kind of keep paying. Right. I mean, if you have something like 2008, it kind of causes a problem, but I think overall it's a good business to have, and I think it would increase the profitability. So to me, that's another upside.
Okay.
So when you're thinking all our valuation that we're doing on kind of their 2022 forecast, that does not include that they might increase their earnings by another billion or two through that financing arm. And they didn't have it because they had so much debt, and they just managed to get their net industrial debt to zero in 2018. Yeah. Which they went down from like 10 billion euros in 2014 when they released their 5-year plan to 2018, and everyone's too aggressive, it's not gonna happen. Boom, they hit it. Yeah. Like they hit almost every single target from the 2014 business plan. I looked into it, which is super impressive, except sales, which I think they did quite a bit less. But then again, they managed to increase their margins more than they anticipated. So overall, their kind of their EBIT earnings or their earnings per share, they kind of hit that. And then you also have to think that they spun out Ferrari, so you have to calculate that back in. So they hit every single target I found, except the volume of cars. And hopefully they hit every single target in 2022 again. Then at that point I would say this investment's a home run. I don't think they will, and we should talk about all the risks and downsides. So yeah, but that's kind of what I look at. I guess one other upside is China, but I guess that's included in the numbers for 2022, so it's not an upside on top, but it's potential for extra value for the company. Guess a couple questions. Is that an above average business at a below average price?
It's not an above average.
It's a below average business.
It's a below average business at a below average price.
Yeah. Well, it's very cheap.
Yeah.
So
it's cheap. Yeah.
So I said it's below average.
That's something price. To say that you can make. There's a lot of opportunities that, like, not every successful investment has to be the next Facebook or Google or fast growers. There's a lot of
slow growers
where the value, there is value to the business. It's just it's low. You know, you don't apply such a big multiple, but it might be valued at 3% growth, but it's really going to grow 5% growth. So there's a lot of opportunity in that area.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. This business is trading at not a low multiple of P of 10 or 8. It's trading at a P of like 4 or 5 right now, depending on how you look at it. And in 5 years, if it would hit the targets, it would trade at a P of 2. Which I don't, if they would hit their target, there's no way they would trade at a P of 2.
No.
They would trade higher.
Well, even meanwhile, if they started making the more milestones they hit, it's going to build their credibility that they're going to hit that mark. Unless there's some really weird things going on in the world, politics or economy that would be holding it down. But
I think all the calculations that we did, they don't even include the free cash flow that they can use for dividends and mm-hmm. share buybacks. So yeah. that gives you an additional return on your stock.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of upside potential. I see some downside potential. To me, the biggest risk, cyclicality and diesel. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's going to play out. But I'm just kind of looking at the risk-reward ratio and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm happy to own like a 5% of my portfolio in that stock. Yeah. That's how I look at it. What are your thoughts? Maybe if it drops 10%,
I
10-20%?
I would start a smaller position right now. And But I would put a lot more if I got down to, you know, $10 or $9. Because I just feel more confident in terms of the limited downside at that level. Where right now, I still see there's some downside. And I'm a little bit more concentrated investor. So when I put in money into a business, it's generally a lot more.
Yeah.
So I got to make sure that there's not quite as much downside.
Yeah. You don't hold any 1 or 2% positions typically, where that can happen for me.
Right.
So,
1-2% is not a bad thing to lose, especially if it's only 50%. So, even just 0.5% of your portfolio value. Yeah. But if you put in 10-20%, it becomes a little bit bigger. It's hard to make that money back sometimes.
Any other thoughts on the business or kind of been through it all?
A lot of the bases there. We got a good range of valuation for the company, and
it's a very wide range, $10 billion to $100 billion. No, but you know what?
People think you need to come up with a specific target of what a business is worth, but you can't, because you're not 100% right, and the business people who work for the business don't know 100% either.
Yeah.
So it's a lot safer to come up with a range.
Yeah. Oh, you're predicting the future when you're investing in stocks. You're predicting the future, and I think it's impossible to predict the future. People who, like, there's a lot of people I find, they know exactly what's going to happen in 5 and 10 years from now. They'll be like, oh, there'll be like 100% autonomous vehicle in 10 years from now. And I think these people are delusional that kind of like think they can predict exactly. So for me, it's kind of like, I want to kind of assign some probabilities on future events, kind of thing, and kind of come up, is this a good bet or not?
You make a wide enough bet based on numbers, it's a better probability that large range of bet is going to work out. I think that's how, like, those fortune tellers at the at the fairs do things. They do broad predictions about you, and then you're surprised it works out. It's so broad.
That turns true.
You'll get a job next year.
Yeah. So what I would say, it's a crummy business in general, like all car manufacturers are. It's just tough business, low margins. But there's definitely people who have made a killing in the business, but they usually bought at the low end of the cycle, and now we're probably at the high end of the cycle. So I guess for Chrysler in particular, Peter Lynch in the 80s, I think he made really good money when the minivan came out of
bankruptcy then.
And then Pabrai, he probably has like somewhere between a 5x and 10x on the stock right now. So it was a fantastic investment for him. And probably now that I'm in it, it's probably just about to crash. And this is probably right at the top of the cycle, and a recession's hitting. And I just think it's still trading at a good valuation. Maybe if there was a big pullback in the stock due to a recession, maybe it's even more worthwhile to increase the position. Who knows?
That's what's interesting about investing, is how it plays out based on your thesis. And
I think everyone needs to decide for themselves. Look at the risks. Look at the current market cap.
Yeah.
Look where they see the company in 5-10 years. What's the investment horizon? If you want to hold this for 6 months or a year, I would probably say stay away.
Right.
That's my opinion. These things, that's not going to work out.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to add.
Nothing else.
Okay. Yeah. That was a lot of fun researching the stock, and I like your perspective on the stock. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Thanks everyone for listening in. Have a good day. Yep. Bye. Disclaimer: this podcast does not constitute investment advice. It is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Do your own due diligence and use the information provided at your own risk.